This podcast is brought to you by Men's Tee Clinic. Men's Tee Clinic is the team I trust with my total wellness optimization, and so should you. Five DFW locations with North Frisco, El Dorado Parkway at Dallas North Tollway now open. Call 972-GO-MEN'S-TEE or visit mensteeclinic.com.
Have you ever wondered what it's like to experience something paranormal, supernatural, or unexplainable? Join host Jack Wagner on the podcast Otherworld as he explores spine-chilling real stories shared by everyday people who have experienced something unexplainable. Listen each week for first-person testimony from people who have come face-to-face with something that can't just be explained away. Listen and follow Otherworld, an Odyssey podcast, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
KNC Masterpiece right here on 105 Through the Fan. You got me, Kevin Hagelin, Corey Majors, the famous Mike Bassick, and joining us for one day and one day only, Alec Medford. Gentlemen, welcome to the program.
Oh, wow. That was a good movie. Like, it was also terrifying. Didn't they cut that one scene out?
Yeah, where they laid in the middle of traffic and he's like, I'm reading about how good I am under pressure.
Probably smart. They also spit in each other's mouths out on the field. And then what happened was two of my friends from high school, they used to do that. They did it in middle school. Mm-hmm. And then when they got to high school, yeah, they would hit each other's pads and spit in each other's mouth. And then one day one of them spit. And then the other, and then took off running. And then before the game, there's one of them chasing the other one around the field trying to spit in his mouth. It was weird.
Classic Bryan Adams. Now, unfortunately, not the most classic performance from the Rangers last night. Let's go to cut number one, because the Rangers had their winning streak broken.
Runners at first and second, and that pitch to Moniak is lifted high and deep to right. Jankowski backtrack, walling out of here. A three-run home run for Mickey Moniak.
Now, I know we played the Angels scoring runs, and that's all fine and well. Obviously, they won the game 7-2 to break the Rangers' major league leading five-game win streak. But it was the Rangers, to me, that were far more frustrating in this game. It wasn't that home run. It wasn't the Neto home run. It wasn't the fact that it's Neto and not Nito.
Right.
Like I really think it should be. It was the fact that the Rangers, when it comes to runners in scoring position, man, oh man, did they have a few huge opportunities. And Langford and Garcia both struggled mightily, I'll say.
They had their chances. That's the thing, is yesterday only scoring two. They had their chances to score 10.
Yes.
And they didn't take advantage of it. You got bases loaded with less than two outs with your four and five hole hitters coming up and you scored zero. So I look at it and go, well, I guess in a way you had chances to win. Obviously, if you do that, and I'll get to Daniel Robert later in Baseball Nuggets. Probably Daniel Robert isn't coming into the game.
Yes, agreed.
So then you're going with better options in those situations to, if the score is tied at five, or if you've taken the lead and you're winning, let's say 6-5 or 8-5, it's going to be a different situation. But Wyatt Langford, he's having a tremendous from June on situation, but yesterday had a couple of huge opportunities. Went 0-2 with two Ks in the situation. And then Adolis Garcia had two huge situations. Yep. He had it with two outs rather than one out, and he didn't come through either.
He struck out and popped up, I believe, yeah, in the fifth and the seventh. So just disappointing. You knew at one point they were going to lose, but this still felt like a game that was very winnable.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It was the
bad day yesterday.
But isn't that kind of their MO most of this season so far has been that they don't drive in runs whenever they have these opportunities.
Last year they did early in the year. Yeah. It was like it changed as the first, I don't know, 20 games of the season. I'm guessing an amount of games, 20 to 30 games. They were one of the better teams.
Yeah.
And then May hit. And then right around late April, early May is when everything changed in these situations. And then they got better at it lately. And yesterday they did.
From the 2-5-4, Garcia is the entire problem. Time to move on. Yesterday, Kevin, when we talked with Bochy, it was, we need him. We need him to be him. And if he's not, like, he didn't say if he's not him, there's no other. But we need him. If we're going to make this run, he's got to be the guy. That's more than listening to Mark McLemore. That's a guy right there that can put the entire team on his back for a couple weeks and say, guys, follow me, and carry through on it. And we thought we were cracking that a couple days ago. And then last night, maybe it didn't happen. Maybe it happens, though, in the next few days. You see that tear happen, but last night was just an unfortunate one.
One of the issues...
That's baseball, right? Like, yeah. There's always chances to get back out there.
That is true. And Adolis Garcia, I feel like, has had a mightily disappointing season. But the issue that you're going to run into is what Corey was just bringing up when Boach said yesterday, that's a guy that we're going to need. But it extends more throughout this team because they did win the World Series. Like, I understand the need for, if you have the need for upgrade and everything like that, but even yesterday, Boach was like, we're pretty set in the outfield. But when we brought up Taveras, this was a couple of months ago, he was like, this is a guy who was a starter for a team that just won you the World Series. When we brought up Adolis, this is the guy that you're gonna need. And so I understand the perspective of the people. I'm probably with you on Leody, and I feel like we've talked about that for a while. It does not appear as though the Rangers, or at least Bruce Bochy, share that sentiment. And if the decision makers don't share that sentiment, then we can think whatever we want. Then that doesn't mean it's going to have any impact.
I think the thing here is if you're frustrated with Adolis Garcia, one, you should love him forever because you have a World Series.
Oh, yeah, him. You do.
Second, who are you replacing him with?
Yeah, because people...
There's lots of great hitting outfielders out there. You want Derek Hill out
there every day? I'm not dogging on Derek Hill, and Adolis hasn't had a good year. He's had a below-average year.
And Evan Carter's not ready to be in the outfield, and to, like, you don't have that option right now.
And the other thing, too, is the trade market stinks. Like, I was listening and watching MLB Network. I do that quite a bit. And they're like, man, if you need a hitter, and the team that they bring up every time, Seattle Mariners... They're like, they desperately need a hitter or two hitters. And they're like, they're going to try to trade for one. Well, a month ago, they were like, go get Pete Alonso. Pete Alonso's off the market now because they're competing for a playoff spot in New York. And they're like, well, we bring up Vladimir Guerrero Jr., but do they have enough to even go get Vladimir Guerrero Jr.? And then they start looking, and then they say, there's not much offensive options out there to go trade for. So if you're like, Adolis Garcia, we need to move on. One, you have him under a two-year $15 million contract. That is very low.
And still, and for the record, I still think that has something to do with some of these struggles. But it's a tough kind of like catch 22, right? Because you get the sense that Adolis Garcia wanted a better deal, whether that meant more annual per or whether that meant, hey, let's just give me like a real outright extension. Not positive about that. But on the flip side, I know the Rangers are thinking, hey, we keep thinking back to your second half in 2021 or the inconsistencies that we see. And this season does him no favors because this was the Rangers' concern. We're going to pay you all of the money and then we're going to get a longer struggle from Adolis Garcia. Because more than most players, you know you're going to get the epic peaks and valleys with him.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that the Rangers kind of look at that deal and they're like, and this is why you didn't get a better deal. And sometimes I wonder if Adolis is affected by the fact that he didn't get a better deal.
And I know this was something we've kind of wondered all along here. Maybe I'm wrong about this. Maybe there are a bunch of these guys who just went through a playoff time for their first time and went through winning a World Series for the first time and went through celebrating a World Series for the first time. Maybe they're just gassed. And they don't have it right now. Catching up to the fastballs, they're not identifying it. They're not doing the things, and it's taking them longer to get back into that groove, and maybe he's part of that too. Because, again, not all of those guys. Corey Seager? Who else? Scherzer? But Scherzer not really. Like, Corey Seager and Eovaldi are pretty much it that have experienced that kind of deep run, and then said, let's go do it again the next year. It's taken them. Maybe they're just burnt out, Kevin. Maybe it happens.
Don't
just
say burnt that out this year. Please, no matter what, don't say all in and don't say burnt out. Those
Michael
feel
Young
like,
once told me we were all in.
Okay, well, that
we
was
went to the World Series.
That was when
year.
That phrase meant something.
We went all in.
Now we've really devalued.
And we went to the World Series.
I hope that you're right.
And now we have a trophy.
Do you want to talk about Adolis in the home run derby, or do you want to talk about cool auction items for All-Star Weekend?
Adolis in the home run derby.
Okay.
Will he get burnout after swinging hit the bat so many times in the home run derby?
Please stop using that phrase. It's giving me nightmares.
What other way can I describe it, Kevin? Will he get gassed? Is that how you want me to say it?
Yeah.
Same thing as DeMarcus Lawrence.
I know,
said.
You're right. But it makes me feel better, oddly, that you used a different word.
Okay.
This will be the fourth straight season the Rangers have had somebody in the home run derby. Joey Gallo in 2021, Corey Seager in 2022. And then this is two straight seasons for Adolis Garcia. I'm excited just because, like, I'm not saying this, oh, he's going to win or anything like that. I just think it's cool that you're going to have a hometown guy in the hometown park. I think that naturally just adds to the excitement.
The baseball wants this. Sure. They always want the team hosting to have a guy in the home run derby.
It's just whether or not that guy can do it or wants to do it.
Yeah, and just unfortunately for the Rangers this year, they just haven't had a lot of power at the plate and a guy that you feel like is going to put on a great show. I hope he does. Everybody, he'll be the favorite in the building, as in people will be cheering for him. But when you look at the field, probably not the favorite. The one thing is how much does this matter in a home run derby? That there's a local kid in the home run derby. Like, how much love do you think Bobby Witt Jr.?
I think he's going to get the second most. I really do. I don't know what that difference is going to be from Adolis to Bobby Witt, but I do feel like he's been identified with this Metroplex for quite a while.
I'm interested in that because, like, the Royals are kind of faceless, honestly. Like, they are. They're one of those organizations that they exist, and they're decent this year. They're, like, they're on their way to maybe being good. I'm going to have a mullet at the end of this year, I believe.
Yes, you are.
But I hope he doesn't get more of a cheer than Adolis, because Adolis could eat that up, man.
Yeah.
Like, he could eat that up and really, like, that's part of his superpower is absorbing that energy.
There's 20,000 Colleyville people that are going to show up, and then he does.
Man, and, like, the whole area is shut down because they're, like, gone to the home run derby.
And so that Topgolf that Jared used to host this thing at will be empty?
Yeah, just for that night. And so if you ever wanted to make a reservation, yeah, you had problems with it.
Nobody's working at the Topgolf, Kevin.
Yeah.
They're all at the game, at the home run derby.
Look, I can't rule that out. I don't believe that's going to happen, but I can't rule it out either. All right, guys, we're going to need to pool our money because there's some really cool stuff that's happening at the All-Star Game and the All-Star Weekend, different auctions. So there's going to be an auction over the weekend and Monday. There's going to be another auction that starts on Tuesday. It includes a 14-karat gold pendant presented to Lou Gehrig in 1933 at the first ever MLB All-Star Game in Chicago. Presale estimates, $50,000 to $100,000.
Whoa. And that's going to be here?
Yes.
To auction off?
Yes. Well, not in the station, but as part of the All-Star festivities.
It'll be in
DFW. Mickey Mantle, the bat that he used in the 1967 All-Star game that he gave to a bat boy, is expected to command $100,000. There's autographed baseballs from John F. Kennedy, Dwight D. Eisenhower are going to be sold as part of the collection.
Wow. They're both dead.
That is true. The Eisenhower autographed baseball is expected to go for between $40,000 and $60,000, and the JFK one expected to go for double that. Really? I don't know if it's going to go for more because it's in the Metroplex. I don't know. I understand how that could be a tricky situation, but a lot of really cool stuff.
I just thought I'm going Monday to the home run derby. I would really like for, after the home run derby, to really set it off is they get Biden and Trump to tee it off at home plate and they just see how far they can hit golf balls to center field just to see what their handicap could be and just see if he can hit the ball over 50 yards.
I will watch that.
Yeah,
I think that is a non-political statement.
Million people.
I will just watch that to be like, oh my Lord, this is embarrassing.
That's smart of them to go with one from each side of the aisle, too. You know,
you like that? You like the nonpartisan nature of the auction?
Like okay. My big concern, though, is obviously security. Like you, Kevin, when it comes to memorabilia and cards and stuff, considering
that is a delicate subject
here at DFW
this last week. Yes,
make sure
I'm surprised they haven't been caught.
I am also surprised.
Video footage of their tattoos, of their faces.
Yeah, the Dallas Card Show people, when we first saw the video, you're like, I see how they did it. But now that you've seen more screenshots and videos, and we talked about their security, they have a lot of video security around there. You're like, okay.
If you're a criminal, how stupid are you to get a tattoo? Like, that's a very
big... And not
big
have it covered. Yeah. Or at least not have it covered.
That's a pretty big identifier.
Oh, yeah.
Do you trust Alec? Because he has lots of visible tattoos, thus making him less likely to be a criminal.
Well, he's also a ginger.
Ooh.
So that's a great
that.
Point.
There's that to deal with.
That
All
is
right, guys.
Point.
I've ordered Tiff treats off to you.
Oh, my God. We're the KC Masterpiece. Right. I guess that means we're going to break. Yeah. Coming up
next.
I'm
going to Tiff treats.
It's time to talk about the Cowboys offensive line. Will they be this good? And what are your concerns? Next, right here on the.
Have you ever wondered what it's like to experience something paranormal, supernatural, or unexplainable? Join host Jack Wagner on the podcast Otherworld as he explores spine-chilling real stories shared by everyday people who have experienced something unexplainable. Listen each week for first-person testimony from people who have come face-to-face with something that can't just be explained away. Listen and follow Otherworld, an Odyssey podcast, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Man.
Second and 10, Prescott back. Little swing pass on the right side, a screen for Dowdle. Two great blocks, 10, 5, and he streaks in. It's a Thanksgiving Day touchdown for Rico Dowdle.
KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. Let's talk about all of your sweet emotions today, as well as the Dallas Cowboys. Actually, I'd probably not do that first one. As well as the Dallas Cowboys offensive line. Now, I know we've wanted to talk about this for, I don't know, like a week, but Pro Football Focus had the Dallas Cowboys as the number 10 offensive line in all of the lands going into the season. Yes, Mike, this offensive line.
I'm shocked by that.
You think that's too high, right?
I do. I think at best it's average.
Okay.
So, I mean, I think at best 15, at worst 20.
Okay. All right. I'm kind of curious.
Logic?
Why?
Okay.
Why do you have them that low?
I don't think the OU kid, this is just me listening.
Guyton?
I don't think that OU kid is ready to play in the NFL yet, from what I understand.
Okay.
Now, obviously, that can change in preseason football or whatever, but. I just think that he could be wildly inconsistent, and then I don't think they have a center.
Okay, I got you. I'm. I don't.
And then all it takes is one injury, and you're like, oh crap.
So let me play. I'm not playing devil's advocate here. Let me play a game here.
Jesus advocate.
Let's say the center is what you think it is, but Tyler Guyton proves to be serviceable at tackle. Okay. Like he's a good rookie tackle. You get a Tyler Smith type rookie year out of him. Was Tyler Smith's rookie year exceptional? Or was it, that's better than we thought.
It was really, I wouldn't say exceptional, but it was really good, especially compared to expectations.
Do you then feel, if you get that out of the tackle, but the center still wobbly, do you feel like it was a higher than 15 offensive line across the board?
Probably.
Steel in a healthy season, hopefully, like fingers crossed that he's like truly back and healthy. Zach Martin still not Zach Martin anymore, but still Zach Martin.
Really good.
Yeah. And then Tyler Smith's a really good left guard.
Okay, two questions. Do you think Tyler Smith is now better than Zach Martin?
No. I understand that question, and he might well be. I'm not prepared to say that yet, though.
I'll agree with Kevin in that I have to see the downfall of Zach Martin, and I have to see Tyler Smith go that far. He's not gotten to Zach Martin level yet, but in the what we think of Zach Martin in the past.
Next question. Do you think Guyton can be as good as Tyler Smith's rookie year?
Yes.
Or will be, I guess, either way.
Okay, see, and that's, I feel like that's a different question.
It is.
And
it's a far different position, too.
Yes.
So like the athleticism is going to be a big key there.
Can be, I think he can. Will be is where I'm just trying to figure out if that is my fandom hope, or is that my like actual football breakdown hope? You know what I'm saying? So like, I understand where you're coming from because Corey, I'm not saying you have to agree with this, but I think some people's concerns are there's concerns at three different levels or at three different positions on the offensive line, right? Guyton
unanswered.
How quickly will he be able to do it? Whether it's Hoffman, whether it's Beebe.
Yeah, that's an unanswered thing too.
Same thing. And then I think a lot of people still have questions about Steele. Was it coming off injury or was this like...
Oh, no, yeah. That's definitely a big factor for me when it comes to Terrence Steele because there were times before the injury that we were like, dude, look at how that right side dominates. They absolutely were a dominant right side of the offensive line, him and Zach Martin with their doubles. And I hope that it was kind of a blip on the radar for him last year. And I understand the center spot, but those are things where I'm looking like, I got to see it before I can say it's bad. Does sure. that make, like with Guyton, I'm like, I know what he was at OU. I've watched all the tape. I kind of know what Brock Hoffman is as a backup, but I do have to see it before I think it's bad. So yeah. I can, and also one of the other things that Rizza is a factor that I don't think people are thinking about enough. And this is where I could look at it being taking a dip. Without Tyron here, he and Zach Martin did lead the way. He and Zach Martin and Travis Frederick, they had a mentality on the work that you put in to be an offensive lineman. Like they had a certain standard that they held. And I don't know if Zach Martin's the only voice in that now. And all those guys are like five separate offensive linemen, or if they're still that tight family that's like, this is how we work as an offensive unit. And if that's the case, if Tyler Guyton's walking in, he's like, no, I'm part of this. And Tyler Smith's ready to take over. And no, this is the standard that we set a long time ago, and this is what we're going to be. And I'm feeling a lot more positive. But if it's five, offensive line is a place where it has to be synchronization like the Cowboys yeah. cheerleaders.
Yeah.
You got to be in the same mindset, understand.
Did you also start watching that Netflix
absolutely.
Show?
Absolutely. Dude, okay. I remember, this is really dumb, but I remember.
Reese is a cutie pie, huh?
I remember a coach watching, it was the Kilgorettes. Is that what they are?
Or the Rangerettes, maybe?
Yeah, the Rangerettes. And dude, they would jump up and land all at the same yeah. time. And this coach goes, God, if our offensive line just had that kind of synchronization. And that's exactly what you like. You need them to be one mind, one body, moving the way that they do. And I just don't know if it's going to be there because we're lucky that Tyron Smith was what he was for so long.
Do you know how many of the Dallas Cowboys cheerleaders have major injuries the rest of their life based off of that splits they do?
It's probably a pretty high number,
they
right?
Have to get, yeah. Their hips and their knees and everything get jacked up because of that one move.
Ooh, I can see that.
I will say I'm excited about the if Hoffman turns out to be good. I'm excited about the backup being BB.
Okay.
I think BB has a nasty streak that you need on your offensive line. And I like that he could be behind those three, Martin, Tyler Smith, and Hoffman, if Hoffman's good enough to carry that role and rock that way. But if he needs to be your center because Hoffman can't cut it, I feel like you got a dude that's not going to back down from the tough fights in the NFL in the middle
before
of the
line.
Before
you answer, Kevin, yeah. I'm expecting BB to be great on special teams.
Are you thinking about Don Beebe?
Well, it's his son. I mean, the guy.
Is it really? Are you just making that up?
Same last name.
Yes. I don't know if that is the case whatsoever.
I'll look it up.
Now, usually, former wide receivers have huge sons who become offensive linemen.
Yeah, why the hell not? Now,
they are not related.
Okay.
Great.
Well, so I mean, now you're out on
Mike's
Cooper,
got a good
maybe?
Point. Do you remember how hard he hustled to get that to swat that ball out of Leon Lett's hand?
Yeah, and great thing is there's no nepotism here then.
Yeah, I don't think anyone would ever say nepotism when it comes to the Cowboys. Now you bring up an interesting alternate view of this because we talked about all the things that could be bad for the Cowboys offensive line. But if some things turn your way, like, for example, if Terrence Steele goes back to a couple of years ago, Terrence Steele, and you feel better about him coming off the injury, you're a season removed, then you feel great about that. Zach Martin's still doing his thing. If Hoffman and Beebe throw down like a real deal center competition where you're like, oh my gosh, these guys are both pretty good, then that's a huge win for you. We've talked about it. At CBS, maybe last week, we discussed this interior lineman in the game. CBS had Zach Martin third and Smith fourth.
Wow.
And so obviously they believe the best combination of guards in the league belongs to the Dallas Cowboys. And then it would be up to Tyler Guyton if he does some good things. Then all of a sudden you feel really good about your wide receiver. But man, that's a big variation right there.
Yeah, I guess the one thing that Cowboy fans really can sink their teeth into and go, this is what they do. When they find a guy they like in the first round as an offensive lineman, it works.
Yeah, McClay
defensive lineman, very different. But offensive linemen, they know what they're doing. So Guyton to like, hey, is he going to be as good as Tyler Smith? Or, you know, kind of what you're talking about here is I just feel like there is this confidence that you can have with the Cowboys and offensive linemen that for some reason, I don't know why I'm nervous about it, but with at least Guyton. And I will say why am I drawing a blank? The Wisconsin kid who people didn't like, but he wasn't bad. Frederick was great. They're both Wisconsin guys. You got it. But he wasn't bad. He wasn't good. Yeah. I'm not saying he was good, but where he was picked, he ended up being all right. Yeah. And so
he wasn't strong enough for the spot, I think. There were a lot of times when I was just like, oh, man, if he could just be in that spot against those big guys on the defensive line, he needed to be stronger or have a little more finesse in his technique.
Now,
little more judo to it, you know what I'm saying?
Yes,
whenever actually, you get some judo, you can get people off balance and throw them on the ground.
I know that will be a penalty, though, but I absolutely want to see them do that kind of hip toss block all of the time. Is there a team that you think stands out as having a really good offensive line or a really terrible offensive line?
Well, besides like the terrible teams,
yes,
I feel like Cincinnati always has a bad offensive line for Joe Burrow that he has to overcome.
That has definitely been true. I always wonder if, like, you see some big swings because they invest in it, but the Bengals are still listed as 21 by Pro Football Focus. So, in the bottom half of the
league.
The Browns are always good because they run the ball well.
That was the same thing I was thinking.
Cleveland Browns are number four on the list. The top five goes like this. The Jets, the Browns, the Colts, the Eagles.
Even with losing Kelsey?
Yes.
Are the Lions in this mix?
The number one offensive line in all of the land is the Detroit Lions.
Yeah, man. Dude,
and they're all wide receivers, too, if they need to be.
they do like to run out.
Yeah, they all say, I'm a wide receiver.
Is this still going back to the two-point conversion play from that's what we're discussing? Okay.
Yeah. Just think about, remember when we were talking about Penei Sewell and everybody was like, I don't know about this. And everybody was
he's awesome.
He's going to be great. And he has turned out to be absolutely fantastic for that team.
And then in case you were wondering, like, well, I didn't actually go through the blurb for the Cowboys for Pro Football Focus. I feel like we chopped it up, but here's their truncated version of it. Although the Cowboys offensive linemen had been among the best five units in the league for years, that position is in jeopardy going forward. The Cowboys let Tyron Smith and Tyler Biadasz walk in free agency, and now Tyler Guyton is set to replace Smith while Brock Hoffman is expected to play center. It did not help Dallas that right tackle Terrence Steele had a disappointing 2023 season. And then it points out they have one of the best guard duos in the entire NFL. Now, whether or not you think it's the best, that might be a matter of opinion.
You shore up that center position, and you are a better team.
It does feel like a game changer to have, like, then you would feel like a lock on the interior of the offensive line. I know so much gets paid attention to the tackles.
There are a couple things there. One, it's the first thing right in the quarterback's face, and it's a shorter distance from the position to the quarterback. So if people can get through right there at your center spot, shorter distance to get to the quarterback and take him down. And it's a distraction, dude. Where you're mostly throwing and stepping up into the pocket is behind those three guys. The guys out on the edge, they're taking care of the speed that's coming after you. But it's right there in the middle where you're going to step up and into a spot. And Dak is traditionally, look at his history, whenever he's comfortable up there, he's a more comfortable quarterback.
We're the KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. Coming up next, it's time for Baseball Nuggets with Mike Bashek.
Michael Lorenzen doesn't go into the All-Star break in a great way. We talk about it next.
Here's the 2-2 pitch. Swing and a ground ball hit to first, but taken into the gut by Shawnwell. He'll take it to the bag, and that'll do it. The Angels salvage the final game in this series, and in so doing, they snap the Rangers' longest winning streak of the year.
KNC Masterpiece back here on 105.3 The Fan. Right now, it's time for Baseball Nuggets with Mike Bashek.
The bad news yesterday in baseball was Seattle and Houston both won. So when you had it to five back, or was it five and a half? Five back
five,
and then...
5.5 to 6.5.
Yeah, and then you go from... I'm trying to do the math here.
You're 3.5 back of Houston. Now you're 4.5.
Great. Now what?
Why would the Angels do that to us?
I don't know. They tried to let us come back.
Yeah, they're like, here, let's load the bases for you in the 5th and the 7th.
And then our former guy here, Hans Solo Kraus, who we interviewed right before he got traded.
Yes.
Came in and did a good enough job to get out of a situation. So congratulations to Hans Kraus.
Yes, I mean that.
Well,
when he introduced himself to as when he got drafted, he said, "I am Hans Kraus and I throw the gas."
I love it.
And we don't have him anymore.
So
I get it.
Michael Lorenzen has had a very good year for the Texas Rangers. I want to make that clear. 5-5 with a 3.52 ERA at the All-Star break is an awesome start or an awesome half to his season. One, Corey, I want you to go to ESPN and I want you to pull up Michael Lorenzen and I want you to tell me if you find anything weirdly wrong with his profile picture.
With his profile picture on ESPN?
Huh. Yeah. I think that they put on...
This looks like his hat's too small.
100%. I know that's that's a made-up picture. Like they had to take a picture from Philadelphia or Detroit, but I'm like... You guys could have done a better job of making the hat look like it's a real hat. Like, it's like, that's a hat way too small you threw on, like, just a picture of Michael Lorenzen.
Doesn't it look too small?
Yeah.
I get
what you're saying.
I'm like, wait, you guys did a bad job of cropping this Ranger hat onto his head. It's way too small.
Is that a bigger concern for you than the walks?
No.
Okay, man, that was a really, you really thought about that for a while.
I wouldn't be happy if I was Michael Lorenzen, if I went to my ESPN profile and I'm like, hey, guys, get the right size hat for this cropped photo you guys did.
What if they were like, well, don't walk 13 people in the last three games and we'll be all right.
But ESPN is very tough to trust with stuff like this. The last time I went to ESPN, they had... this year, Josh Smith with like a 0.0 WAR.
And then the same for the last 2 years. They're like, he never registers anything.
Yeah.
Can I ask you a question about Josh Smith?
This is where you're supposed to say yes. Go ahead.
I want to hold on and just see if I don't answer if we just sit here forever. Yes, Corey, you can.
Is he?
What if the answer was no? Do you just then not ask it?
I would have just gone on about our show.
I just ask it.
Is he having a good year? Or is Josh he just Smith? The best Ranger and we're like, oh my gosh, Josh Smith.
He's having a good year.
And then also if you're comparing him to Josh Smith, he's having an unbelievable year.
Okay. All right.
If those were the same numbers and those were Corey Seager's numbers, we wouldn't say he's having a good year.
Yeah.
Okay.
Gotcha. Because we'd be like, well, hey man, we got to have more homers. We got to, you know, but it's Josh Smith compared to other third basemen. Good year. Josh Smith compared to Josh Smith, what we've seen in a year and a half, unbelievably great year.
Okay, and everybody else on the team is not playing that great, so he looks like the best Ranger ever right now. Gotcha.
Right.
Okay.
And Corey Seager has gotten hot enough lately that you can now, as we have three games left till the All-Star break, I think you can make an argument, and I'd have to compare. I don't have their comparisons up, but with Corey Seager's last, I don't know, about eight games or so, you could be like, ooh, it's getting close to where Corey Seager might have your best offensive number.
Gotcha. Okay.
So Michael Lorenzen in his last three games has walked 13 hitters, and that's in 15 innings.
He does play with some fire.
He does. And when you go back to certain months, I go back to the month of May, 2.87 ERA on an undercover cop. Is that like it's on a rap song?
I think it's 187.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But
let's not do that. That's murder.
In 31.1 innings in that month and an under 3 ERA, he had 15 walks. That doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
When you're walking a guy every other inning, your ERA is going to struggle. But he's been able to throw a lot of double plays in these situations. If you go back to the month of April, he had a 4.24 ERA, which in 17 innings, 9 walks. That makes more sense if you're going to walk a guy. So pretty much his best month was in the month of June. He had 33 2/3 innings and only 11 walks, which is just about average, major league average. So he has dealt with overwalking players throughout the season, but it hasn't hurt him until lately. And I'm just like, I feel like when you keep doing something against the average, like this shouldn't happen. You should have a worse ERA.
Sure.
You should have more runs being scored against you. I think it's starting to catch up to Michael Lorenzen. And that was his last game. He's not pitching in Houston. I feel like Michael Lorenzen, I love what he's done for the Rangers. But if he's going to keep up this kind of stat of throw about 5-6 innings and walk 3-4 guys, I don't know if he's going to keep an ERA in the mid threes or better.
Yeah. What does he do to change that? I mean, throw strikes is probably the answer, Kevin. Yeah.
So, that is a fair point. That feels like what you would tell me.
Yeah, that is what I would say. So never mind. Scratch that question.
But like, honestly, I'm sure we can get whether it's a better breakdown of first pitch strikes or maybe get more chaseable pitches out there, because a ball is not always a ball. You know what I'm saying? Like in terms of the location of the pitch, and you might be like, yeah, oh, that's close enough. I might have to chase it.
And our intern, Max, who's right now running a special errand for us, he brings up a good point. Is it would be one thing if Michael Lorenzen was always walking, I don't know, if Mike Trout was in the lineup yesterday, right? There's really nobody that you would be really scared of in LA's lineup. Now, I guess Ohapi coming into the game because he had a great game the day before.
Me. Yeah.
But if you look at the Angels, you're like, wait, who are you walking and why? If there's certain situations, runner on second, and I'm a right-hander, let's just say it's Marcus Semien. Well, Ron Washington this series decided we're just not going to pitch to Corey Seager anymore if there's a situation because he's just too good. And so you get that. If I look at the walks and I look at who he's walking and it's always the 2- and 3-hole hitter or it's a 5-hole hitter to get to a 6-hole hitter who has way worse numbers, I totally get it. But he at times will walk your 8- and 9-hole hitters and turn the lineup yeah. over, which means he just lost command. So to your point, Corey, what you have to say is, hey, we really have to focus in on the bottom of the order. Those have to be outs. And okay. if they earn their way on base, they earn their way on base. But in a weird way, he's walking too many non-threatening hitters and putting threatening hitters into a situation where they can hurt you. And you're not going to get away with that forever. And I said, I mean, there's certain guys who can. Nolan Ryan walked a lot of people, and then he just struck everybody out. You know, like...
That's
He's
true.
Like,
yeah.
I'm not worried about it.
He was like, I'm going to strike you out and you out and you out, right. but you're on base today.
If you have that in the bag, you're fine. Nolan Ryan also didn't care to hold on runners very well at first base. He's like, you can't steal home. So I'm just going to, you can steal second and third, but right. nobody else is going to hit the ball the rest of the inning. So good luck with that. So if you have that, you can get away with a lot of walks.
Sure.
But he's not a high strikeout guy. So you look at it and you go, okay, this second half, one thing Michael Lorenzen needs to clean up is in his last 15 innings, 3 games, he has 13 walks, and that has to settle down. Or you might have the Michael Lorenzen that Philadelphia traded for, where they're like, oh, no. And this yeah. is one thing that I'm wondering about. I don't think it's the case, but one thing I'm wondering about, and I need to pull up his overall numbers here, 92 innings pitched. I believe last year, I'm going off the top of my head, I think he threw 107 innings for Detroit, and then everything didn't go well in Philadelphia. Does he hit a wall around 100 innings?
Okay.
I'm throwing that out as a question.
But that's something we have to watch for.
Yeah, and now obviously this has been his last kind of innings 80 through 92. But I'm wondering, and I'm hoping it's not the case, is he hitting a little bit of a wall here with his location? Because he needs it. His stuff isn't awesome. His stuff is average for the most part. He has a great changeup. He has great pitches, but overall, you wouldn't say Michael Lorenzen's stuff is well above league average. You'd say it's nice. It's good. Maybe it's a hair above average.
And there was a time where a guy like him, you were like, oh, but he's an innings eater. But he's not really an innings eater at 5, maybe 6 innings most yeah. of the time.
So he had like, been earlier in the year, but lately, because he's walking so many guys, it's struggling to get to an innings eating guy. So he's a guy that needs to improve. And then my last baseball nugget is on Daniel Robert, who we got to see for the first time.
Yeah.
Pitch for the Texas Rangers, and he wasn't able to keep it at 5-2. He gave up a 2-run homer in his second inning of work. And here's what I saw from him. I like his fastball. He is able to touch 98, so it's a hair above average fastball, but there's so many guys now you see. Look at the Angels, who they kept bringing in to get out of these situations. There's so many guys that you bring in now that throw 95 to 98 that are right-handed relief pitchers. So that doesn't make him unique that he's sure. touching 98. It makes him a hair above average,
yeah.
but I didn't love his breaking ball. His breaking ball, when he threw it out of the zone, had great depth or it had great side-to-side movement, but he threw it for a ball. And so the one that he threw for a strike, you would say, is a gyro ball or a spinning breaking ball, but it doesn't break much. So that breaking ball that he has that gets out of the zone needs to be the breaking ball he can throw in the zone.
Okay.
And so I don't know how long he's going to stay up in the major leagues. Obviously, the Rangers have had a lot of relief pitchers that have come up and then been sent back and then come up and sent back. But they're trying out Daniel Robert. I like his fastball. It got on the hitters pretty quickly yesterday. But his breaking ball, I was worried about because it in the zone didn't have great movement. Out of the zone, it did. But you got to be able to throw good ones in the zone for them to chase good ones out of the zone. And that's your Nuggets.
I like it. I like it. With a KNC masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. Coming up next, what is your biggest regret from the Cowboys offseason? 877-881-1053. Let's do that next right here on The Fan.
Got it next.
Here's the 2-2 pitch. Swing and a ground ball hit to first, but taken into the gut by Shawnwell. He'll take it to the bag, and that'll do it. The Angels salvage the final game in this series, and in so doing, they snap the Rangers' longest winning streak of the year.
KNC Masterpiece back here on 105.3 The Fan. Right now, it's time for Baseball Nuggets with Mike Bacek.
The bad news yesterday in baseball was Seattle and Houston both won. So when you had it to five back, or was it five and a half? Five back
five,
and then...
5.5 to 6.5.
Yeah, and then you go from... I'm trying to do the math here.
You were 3.5 back of Houston, now you're 4.5.
Great. Now what?
Why would the Angels do that to us?
I don't know. They tried to let us come back.
Yeah, they're like, here, let's load the bases for you in the fifth and the seventh.
And then our former guy here, Hans Solo Kraus, who we interviewed right before he got traded.
Yes.
Came in and did a good enough job to get out of a situation. So congratulations to Hans Kraus.
Yes, I mean that.
Well,
when he introduced himself to as when he got drafted, he said, I am Hans Kraus and I throw the gas.
I love it.
And we don't have him anymore.
So
I get it.
Michael Lorenzen has had a very good year for the Texas Rangers. I want to make that clear. 5-5 with a 3.52 ERA at the All-Star break is an awesome start or an awesome half to his season. One, Corey, I want you to go to ESPN and I want you to pull up Michael Lorenzen. And I want you to tell me if you find anything weirdly wrong with his profile picture.
With his profile picture on ESPN.
Huh. Yeah. I think that they put on...
This looks like his hat's too small.
100%. I know that's that's a made-up picture. Like they had to take a picture from Philadelphia or Detroit. But I'm like... You guys could have done a better job of making the hat look like it's a real hat. Like, it's like, that's a hat way too small you threw on, like, just a picture of Michael Lorenzen.
Doesn't it look too small?
Yeah.
I
get what you're saying.
I'm like, wait, you guys did a bad job of cropping this Ranger hat onto his head. It's way too small.
Is that a bigger concern for you than the walks?
No.
Okay, man, that was a really, you really thought about that for a while.
I wouldn't be happy if I was Michael Lorenzen, if I went to my ESPN profile and I'm like, hey, guys, get the right size hat for this cropped photo you guys did.
What if they were like, well, don't walk 13 people in the last three games and we'll be all right.
But ESPN is very tough to trust with stuff like this. The last time I went to ESPN, they had... this year, Josh Smith with like a 0.0 WAR.
And then the same for the last 2 years. They're like, he never registers anything.
Yeah.
Can I ask you a question about Josh Smith?
This is where you're supposed to say yes. Go ahead.
I want to hold on and just see if I don't answer if we just sit here forever. Yes, Corey, you can.
Is he?
What if the answer was no? Do you just then not ask it?
I would have just gone on about our show.
I just ask it.
Is he having a good year? Or is Josh he just Smith? The best Ranger and we're like, oh my gosh, Josh Smith.
He's having
a good year. And then also if you're comparing him to Josh Smith, he's having an unbelievable year.
Okay. All
right. If those were the same numbers and those were Corey Seager's numbers, we wouldn't say he's having a good year.
Yeah.
Okay.
Gotcha. Because we'd be like, well, hey man, we gotta have more homers. But it's Josh Smith compared to other third basemen, good year. Josh Smith compared to Josh Smith, what we've seen in a year and a half, unbelievably great year.
Okay, and everybody else on the team is not playing that great, so he looks like the best Ranger ever right now. Gotcha.
Right.
Okay.
And Corey Seager has gotten hot enough lately that you can now, as we have three games left till the All-Star break, I think you can make an argument, and I'd have to compare. I don't have their comparisons up, but with Corey Seager's last, I don't know, about eight games or so, you could be like, ooh, it's getting close to where Corey Seager might have your best offensive number.
Gotcha. Okay.
So Michael Lorenzen in his last three games has walked 13 hitters, and that's in 15 innings.
He does play with some fire.
He does. And when you go back to certain months, I go back to the month of May, 2.87 ERA on an undercover cop. Is that like it's on a rap song?
I think it's 1.87.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But
let's not do that. That's murder.
In 31.1 innings in that month and an under three ERA, he had 15 walks. That doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
When you're walking a guy every other inning, your ERA is going to struggle. But he's been able to throw a lot of double plays in these situations. If you go back to the month of April, he had a 4.24 ERA, which in 17 innings, 9 walks. That makes more sense if you're going to walk a guy. So pretty much his best month was in the month of June. He had 33 2/3 innings and only 11 walks, which is just about average, major league average. So he has dealt with overwalking players throughout the season, but it hasn't hurt him until lately. And I'm just like, I feel like when you keep doing something against the average, like this shouldn't happen. You should have a worse ERA.
Sure.
You should have more runs being scored against you. I think it's starting to catch up to Michael Lorenzen. And this is, that was his last game. He's not pitching in Houston. I feel like Michael Lorenzen, I love what he's done for the Rangers, but if he's going to keep up this kind of stat of throw about 5-6 innings and walk 3-4 guys, I don't know if he's going to keep an ERA in the mid threes or better.
Yeah. What does he do to change that? I mean, throw strikes is probably the answer, Kevin. Yeah.
So, that is a fair point. That feels like what you would tell me.
Yeah, that is what I would say. So never mind. Scratch that question.
But like, honestly, I'm sure we can get whether it's a better breakdown of first pitch strikes or maybe get more chaseable pitches out there, because a ball is not always a ball. You know what I'm saying? Like in terms of the location of the pitch, and you might be like, yeah, oh, that's close enough. I might have to chase it.
And our intern, Max, who's right now running a special errand for us, he brings up a good point. Is it would be one thing if Michael Lorenzen was always walking, I don't know, if Mike Trout was in the lineup yesterday, right? There's really nobody that you would be really scared of in LA's lineup. Now, I guess Ohapi coming into the game because he had a great game the day before.
Yeah.
But if you look at the Angels, you're like, wait, who are you walking and why? If there's certain situations, runner on second, and I'm a right-hander, let's just say it's Marcus Semien. Well, Ron Washington this series decided we're just not going to pitch to Corey Seager anymore if there's a situation because he's just too good. And so you get that. If I look at the walks and I look at who he's walking and it's always the 2- and 3-hole hitter or it's a 5-hole hitter to get to a 6-hole hitter who has way worse numbers, I totally get it. But he at times will walk your 8- and 9-hole hitters and turn the lineup over, which means he just lost command. So to your point, Corey, what you have to say is, hey, we really have to focus in on the bottom of the order. Those have to be outs. And if they earn their way on base, they earn their way on base. But in a weird way, he's walking too many non-threatening hitters and putting threatening hitters into a situation where they can hurt you. And you're not going to get away with that forever. And I said, I mean, there's certain guys who can. Nolan Ryan walked a lot of people, and then he just struck everybody out. You know, like...
That's
He's
true.
Like,
yeah.
I'm not worried about it.
It was like, I'm going to strike you out and you out and you out, but you're on base today.
If you have that in the bag, you're fine. Nolan Ryan also didn't care to hold on runners very well at first base. It's like, you can't steal home. So I'm just going to, you can steal second and third, but nobody else is going to hit the ball the rest of the inning. So good luck with that. So if you have that, you can get away with a lot of walks.
Sure.
But he's not a high strikeout guy. So you look at it and you go, okay, this second half, one thing Michael Lorenzen needs to clean up is in his last 15 innings, three games, he has 13 walks, and that has to settle down. Or you might have the Michael Lorenzen that Philadelphia traded for, where they're like, oh, no. And this is one thing that I'm wondering about. I don't think it's the case, but one thing I'm wondering about and I need to pull up his overall numbers here. 92 innings pitched. I believe last year, I'm going off the top of my head, I think he threw 107 innings for Detroit, and then everything didn't go well in Philadelphia. Does he hit a wall around 100 innings?
Okay.
I'm throwing that out as a question.
But that's something we have to watch for.
Yeah, and now obviously this has been his last kind of innings 80 through 92. But I'm wondering, and I'm hoping it's not the case, is he hitting a little bit of a wall here with his location? Because he needs it. His stuff isn't awesome. His stuff is average for the most part. He has a great changeup. He has great pitches. But overall, you wouldn't say Michael Lorenzen's stuff is well above league average. You'd say it's nice, it's good, maybe it's a hair above average.
And there was a time where a guy like him, you were like, oh, but he's an innings eater. But he's not really an innings eater at five, maybe six innings most of the time.
So he had been earlier in the year, but lately, because he's walking so many guys, it's struggling to get to an innings eating guy. So he's a guy that needs to improve. And then my last baseball nugget is on Daniel Robert, who we got to see for the first time. Pitch for the Texas Rangers, and he wasn't able to keep it at 5-2. He gave up a two-run homer in his second inning of work. And here's what I saw from him. I like his fastball. He is able to touch 98, so it's a hair above average fastball. But there's so many guys now you see. Look at the Angels, who they kept bringing in to get out of these situations. There's so many guys that you bring in now that throw 95 to 98 that are right-handed relief pitchers. So that doesn't make him unique that he's touching 98. It makes him a hair above average, but I didn't love his breaking ball. His breaking ball, when he threw it out of the zone, had great depth, or it had great side-to-side movement, but he threw it for a ball. And so the one that he threw for a strike, you would say, is a gyro ball or a spinning breaking ball, but it doesn't break much. So that breaking ball that he has that gets out of the zone needs to be the breaking ball he can throw in the zone.
Okay.
And so I don't know how long he's going to stay up in the major leagues. Obviously, the Rangers have had a lot of relief pitchers that have come up and then been sent back and then come up and sent back. But they're trying out Daniel Robert. I like his fastball. It got on the hitters pretty quickly yesterday. But his breaking ball, I was worried about because it, in the zone, didn't have great movement. Out of the zone, it did. But you got to be able to throw good ones in the zone for them to chase good ones out of the zone. And that's your nuggets.
I like it. I like it. With a KNC masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. Coming up next, what is your biggest regret from the Cowboys offseason? 877-881-1053. Let's do that next right here on The Fan.
Have you ever wondered what it's like to experience something paranormal, supernatural, or unexplainable? Join host Jack Wagner on the podcast Otherworld as he explores spine-chilling real stories shared by everyday people who have experienced something unexplainable. Listen each week for first-person testimony from people who have come face-to-face with something that can't just be explained away. Listen and follow Otherworld, an Odyssey podcast, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.